This is Amber.
And this is Shannon.
And you're listening to Twin Beaks, the Chicken Fanatics Podcast.
It's fucking great. And welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to episode 4 of the Twin Beaks podcast. My name is Shannon.
And I'm Amber.
So we've got a wide variety of facts and stories to amuse you with,
yes,
of the chicken variety. So before we get to that, though, why don't we do our fourth chick update?
Yeah.
Is it week 4 already?
I think it's actually week 3.
Week 3, okay.
They're 3 weeks old.
How are they doing?
They're doing great. The one that was having problems seems to be better. It's perked up. We seem to kind of solve some of its digestion issues, and it's a little bit smaller than the rest of them, but doing fine. They're mostly fully feathered. They have feathers on their backs. They have fully developed wings and little tails. Their heads are still fluffy. They're starting to look a little funny because they're kind of in between. Let's see. What else can you think of that's different?
Their activity level. They're a lot more active, a lot more game playing, and a lot more resistant to being picked up by people.
That's
mostly
true.
Mostly.
Yeah, they're running away much more.
Well, one thing we were going to talk about is the distinction in breed, because this week we really noticed a lot of definite differences between the different breeds that we got. So why don't you talk about our two feather-footed friends.
Yeah, they are the partridge Cochins, I believe. They're definitely some sort of Cochin, and they are so friendly. They're the only ones that will approach you, and they'll sit there and allow you to stroke them and pet them. And today I picked up one of them, and it actually just kind of cozied down in my hand and kind of nested there, and it was really sweet and really different because the rest of the chickens mostly can't wait to get back on the ground and get a little anxious when they're being handled. So
they don't like it, but these two, they volunteer.
Right, they're both the same breed, so it's not just one chicken, it's the two of them that are the same breed. They both have this characteristic, so it's very friendly chicken.
We're going to talk about the different types of chicken and picking which breeds you want, but just as it ties in here to say that if you want to pick your chickens for certain things, if you get the chance, check out the parents, the breeds that, you know, the adult version of what they came from and the live in the flesh version, and see, you know, are they friendly birds? Do they like to run away? Whatever the case may be. So you can, you know, check out the different types of adults and stuff like that.
So,
you can find out what kind of chicks you want, go meet the parents, so to speak, or just different birds from the same breed, and kind of get an idea of what kind of chicks to order, because it does make a difference.
Yeah. There's also, on My Pet Chicken, a chicken breed selector tool where you can enter in different characteristics and even, I think it has a section for personality or things like that. So that's an interesting thing to check out.
So what else are we doing in terms of, what else have we got to say about the evolution of our little flock here?
Well, they seem more sentient. They seem more interested in what's going on around them, similar to human babies. They sort of take more interest in interacting, checking us out, kind of
I think this is a good time in their development to really try to double down on the handling of them if you want to make them tame to people, because they seem a lot more aware of people, aware of their ability to get away, stuff like that.
Yeah, I think you're totally right. Yeah. And in fact, we've been trying to handle them a lot more. And let's see, another thing that's different is we started introducing some different foods into their diet. Like, we gave them some kale that was chopped up really, really, really small, and some rice, and we started giving them chick grit, which is good for them to help them digest their food when they're really young. And if you don't give that to them, then I guess their crops can get impacted, or they could have some troubles digesting their food. So it's kind of important to offer it to them.
Yeah.
Oh, one interesting thing, the one that was kind of clogged up, we gave it a little teeny bit of olive oil, just dribbled on the beak, just a little bit, and that seemed to really help the bird. I've never really read about doing that, but it just popped in my head from other sort of herbal remedies or, you know, helping people, and it seemed to work quite well, and she's doing better. So
that's good.
Yeah.
Yep. Just a little dab of oil. A
little tiny bit. Yep.
Needed to be lubricated. So, want to do the news?
Yeah. So, yeah, we're
what
ready
are we
for
calling
some
this segment?
Our chicken cabinet of curiosities or something like that. So
Amber's
it
chicken
may
cabinet
evolve over
curiosities.
Time. But
well, I like the sound of it.
Yes.
Anyway, what have you got
so,
for us?
We have one here, which actually Shannon dug up. It was on Fox News, and Rob Verger wrote it. It's about signs of chickens being in the lives of humans for a much longer time than we expected. So I'll read the article here for you. It says, long before chickens were eaten in the form of McNuggets or roasted in restaurant windows, yeah. Ugh. I don't like that part. They were cargo on trade routes and dinner for ancient people. Now, new research that has identified the oldest chicken bones in Africa is shedding light on the humble chicken's deep history. Researchers have discovered that ancient chicken bones in Ethiopia, two of which have evidence of ancient human teeth marks,
wow,
are the oldest known such bones on the continent, dating as old as the year 819 before Christ. The study, published in the International Journal of Osteoarchaeology, helps researchers better understand the different ways humanity's feathered friend first arrived in Africa. Our study provides the earliest directly dated evidence for the presence of chickens in Africa and points to the significance of Red Sea and East African trade routes in the introduction of the chicken. They predate the earliest known Egyptian chickens by at least 300 years and highlight early exotic faunal exchanges in the Horn of Africa during the early first millennium BC. The bones were first excavated from a village called Mesber in northern Ethiopia. Wow, so people have been cultivating chickens for since the beginning of time, it sounds like, practically. That's incredible.
819 BC.
Mm-hmm. That's a long time.
Excuse me, 819. Yeah.
That's wow. That's amazing.
That is something.
Yes.
Wow.
That's a long time ago. But there's an even more ancient chicken that
uh-oh,
they've discovered. Even older than that chicken is a new dinosaur discovered, which scientists are calling the chicken from hell.
Oh, my gosh.
Yes. It's a 66-million-year-old feathered dinosaur resembling a giant demonic chicken.
The scientists call it that.
The scientists, yeah, that's their common name. It has a scientific name, which I'll tell you about, but the scientists call it the chicken from hell.
Well, then I'll call it that. That's the scientific name.
I think that's a super cool name.
Yes.
I mean, I don't care what the, you know, it's a chicken from hell. It looks quite a lot in this picture here, like a cassowary, if you've ever seen that. It has a, it looks like a chicken, but it has like a bone kind of crest on the top of the head. So, yeah, so they...
It looks like a mostly featherless chicken.
Yeah.
With a long lizard tail.
Yeah, but you can see it does have feathers on it. So, but right, not as plentiful as fluffy as a chicken.
Hmm.
But, yeah, so here I'll read this article for you guys. says a newly discovered dinosaur species that paleontologists have dubbed the chicken from hell is among the largest feathered dinosaurs ever found in North America. The 11-foot-long, 500-pound Anzu wylayi is an oviraptor, a family of two-legged bird-like dinosaurs found in Central Asia and Northern America. These dinosaurs range in size from a few pounds to over a metric ton. With its toothless beak, long legs, huge feet, and claw-tipped arms, a wylayi looked like a devilish version of the modern cassowary, a large ground bird from Australia. It was as close as you can get to being a bird without a bird, study leader Matt Lamana, a vertebrate paleontologist at the Carnegie Museum of Natural History in Pittsburgh, said. The dinosaur's well-preserved skeleton suggests it was a wide-ranging eater, munching on a variety of vegetation and perhaps small animals. This species emerged from three 66-million-year-old skeletons excavated from the fossil-rich Hell Creek formation of South and North Dakota. Pretty cool. So, wow. That's some interesting stuff. Prehistoric right. Chickens.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Indeed.
Sounds frightening.
And
that's all we have for this week.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Very good. Well, then let's move into choosing your breeds.
Yes.
Because last week we talked about preparing your yard.
Yeah.
So after you prepare your yard, you get the birds, not the other way around.
Yes.
And now it's time to think about what kind of birds do people want? What kind of birds makes up... You know, what is your chicken dream? What color is your chicken
your
parachute?
Dream chicken.
Yes, what color is your dream chicken? It could get a little strange. What do you want from your birds? There's a lot of different reasons to have chickens. I mean, let's start with that, you know. So
yeah.
What really, part of picking your bird, it would be figuring out what you want
yeah.
out of your chickens. It's... kind of like a dog, like that, you know. There's different types of dogs. There's working dogs, there's bird dogs, there's, you know, retrievers, all kinds of dogs. And you want to pick the right breed, because
mm-hmm.
if you live in a tiny little apartment and get a giant Doberman, you'll be sorry.
That's right.
And on the other hand, if you live out in the middle of nowhere where there's mountain lions and you get a tiny little Chihuahua dog, you might have a hard time there too. So it's just like that, depending on what you're doing.
Mm-hmm.
So what are different reasons to get chickens then, right?
Yeah, there's quite a few. Of course, the first one that comes to mind is the eggs. Everyone wants eggs.
Eggs,
you know,
are fantastic.
And then some people, you know, if they have the stomach for it, they might want to have some meat birds. And then you have your dual purpose birds. You could have pets, and there's some very docile chickens that are very friendly. There's some very showy, attractive chickens that are just delightful to look at.
Yeah.
There's different varieties that lay all different kinds of eggs, if you want to get real specific, different colors of eggs. And
that's right.
That's just a spectrum
of egg colors,
and
isn't there?
Oh, yeah. There's a whole rainbow of egg colors. You could get a group of chickens that lays a rainbow for you, including a, you know, black eggs.
Yeah,
so.
I used to get 7-8 different colors of eggs
uh-huh.
from my flock at one point. So I guess, first of all, there's full-size breeds
mm-hmm.
and there's bantams,
yes.
right? So
yes.
bantams are super tiny little chickens.
Little guys.
And what do we mean by that? We mean
maybe
that...
maybe half the size of
a normal chicken, at least. Yeah, maybe smaller,
mm-hmm.
depending on how big your full-size
yeah.
chicken is.
And there's some variety in the bantams, too. Of,
it's
you know,
true.
Down to teeny tiny and kind of bigger.
But
and...
generally speaking, you're there, you can pick them up with one hand.
Mm-hmm.
So compared to like a full-size hen that you almost have to cradle against your chest,
mm-hmm.
this is just a... wrap your hand around it
yes.
sized bird, which is useful for a lot of things,
mm-hmm.
like what if you've got very small children that
mm-hmm.
you know might be intimidated by a giant flapping barred rock hen,
mm-hmm.
you know, little bantams might
yeah.
be more their speed.
Or if you like just being around lots of different types of chickens, then the bantams, you can fit more of them if you have a small space. And
mm-hmm.
there's certain bantams, I can't think off the top of my head, but a few that lay kind of larger, almost chicken-sized eggs, even though they're very small. So if you get a bunch of those, That could be kind of beneficial. Yeah,
there's always the volume over size mm-hmm. thing.
Speaking of volume, they have a quieter crow typically as well. They're little vocal cords. So,
in fact, I've heard that the highest egg and meat to space ratio actually goes to quail.
Really?
Even though they're the tiny,
they're
so tiny.
Wow.
But you get more egg per calorie and space-wise uh-huh. than you do even with
wow.
chickens.
That's cool.
You just have to eat a lot of little eggs.
Yeah, I heard someone comparing recently. This is good to know that the average bantam egg, it will take about 3 of them to equal a normal chicken size egg.
There you go.
So that's what you're looking at.
Yeah, so they're probably not great production birds. If mm-hmm. what you want is a lot of eggs or a lot of meat, you'll end up with a lot of work instead,
mm-hmm.
and you're better off going with breeds that are meant for eggs or meat.
I've heard they're slightly more intelligent. I don't remember where I heard that, but if anyone wants to look that up and let us know if that's true or has any experiences, I would be interested to find out more.
I've had a few bantams, but they weren't remarkable in that regard. I don't know. Maybe I didn't ask them the right questions. So, let's see. Part of this thing in picking your breed, too, is people can get really, well, let's say you want egg layers,
mm-hmm.
right? So, you go and you look up the best birds for egg laying mm-hmm. and, you know, get those. And you don't really have to do that because all chickens lay eggs, the hens anyway, and... you know, so when you say best egg-laying breed, you're talking about a breed that was bred specifically for shooting out eggs. It's an egg machine, you know? And whereas other breeds might not necessarily have been bred entirely for that purpose, you know? So there's reasons to have... to think outside of the top three box, so mm-hmm. to speak, but... That said, we're going to mention some breeds that are renowned for their specific abilities. I just wanted to throw that in there. Don't get too wedded to the, I need the best egg-laying bird or the biggest meat bird, unless that's all you really care about. If all you want is to see eggs and meat, then by all means, target that. But there's a lot of other advantages to the, you know, ribbon winning
mm-hmm.
varieties,
mm-hmm.
so to speak. So what are good egg laying birds?
Yeah, well, we have the white leghorn, the red and black sexling, Rhode Island red, California white and gray, and it says usually a lot of these egg laying stars begin to lay at 16 to 20 weeks and will lay between 20 and 23 dozen eggs a year, which is quite
wow.
a lot. That is a lot of eggs. So,
wow.
Yeah. I mean, isn't that amazing? So,
that's hard to, yeah. Wow, that's pretty impressive. So, and, who else do we got?
Oh, well, it says we got some astrolorps. They do pretty well, too. I think I already mentioned the Rhode Island reds. The barred rocks lay... 150 eggs per year about, and the nice thing about them is they're also good for a meat bird, and they're also quite docile, so they kind of have a lot going on for them if you want a good egg layer.
Some of my favorite chickens have been barred rocks.
Yeah.
They're really a nice breed, and this is kind of an example of where I was talking about, where, you know, you only get 150 eggs a year instead of 20 to 23 dozen. But maybe you really like the barred rock breed because it's so agreeable, so you'd go with them instead.
They're such a classic chicken, too. You just think of a, you know, 1800s farm or something, and you can just imagine that chicken. It's a beautiful bird.
They're really nice birds. Who was the 20 to 23 dozen a year again?
Well, that was mentioned for these breeds up here, which was the white leghorn, red and black sex link, Rhode Island red, and the California white and gray. Those are some notes I took for those guys. So that's quite astounding. I mean, if you had a couple of those, that is a lot of eggs.
Right.
That's
personally, I think white leghorns are kind of boring looking.
Right. But yeah. But if you want
they just
eggs.
Make me think of factories.
Yeah. That's cute. Yeah.
But then if all you care about is getting eggs, mm-hmm. that might be your bird.
Yeah.
A lot of people like them because they're big, tough birds, too.
Yeah, they're very hardy. Yeah.
So if you live out in the middle of nowhere, that might be a good choice. Mm-hmm. On the other hand, if you live in a little backyard with little kids running around and want it all picturesque and nice, then
I mean, some of those bigger
maybe
breeds
a barred
can,
rock is more your deal.
They can peck the heck out of somebody, too.
Right.
They're not too wimpy, so.
It's worth meeting your breed before you buy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
if you can.
I like that you mentioned meeting the parents because I think chickens do, like aside from the breed personality, they have individual personalities. So you can inherit that from the behavior. You can see that in probably the behaviors of the parents sometimes.
Yeah. Well, that makes me want to get into cognitive development and stuff like that, but
that's awesome.
Probably shouldn't do that right now because we should talk about meat birds instead. Yeah, so meat birds. And boy, going into meat production, if you want to do anything more than just kill the occasional bird for the table, which if you do, you might want to think about getting a different bird besides a bird bred for meat production because they were bred for meat production, not to be backyard birds. Some of these breeds, you know, a lot of them have gotten by throughout the ages not by being particularly productive but by being desirable as backyard birds. So there's a reason those people back then picked those birds and not the birds that people made for factories, because the factory bird varieties tend to not be as easy to work with in the backyard, you know.
I've even heard that some of these meat birds, they put on weight quickly and they're great for that, but you actually don't want to really keep them around for too long because
that's true
they have certain issues that a regular bird not bred for meat specifically wouldn't have.
I had that problem with turkeys because I thought I was getting a old variety turkey that doesn't balloon up crazy.
Yeah.
And I ended up getting a sort of a disused by the industry large-breasted variety. See, they made wide-breasted turkeys that looked like wild ones, and the country had those for years, and then they bred whites where the bird is all white, and the nice thing about that is when you pluck them they don't leave feather ink inside of the body, which looks strange to people. So they bred a white bird just for that appearance, which gives you an idea to the extent the industrial birds have been tailored for an industrial environment, which most of the people listening to this probably aren't planning on having. So anyway, the thing with broad-breasted varieties of turkeys is that they just grow huge and huge. I've never seen anything like it. They they pop out of the chick feed box, discover where the feeder is, park themselves in front of it, and just eat all day every day until they die.
Wow.
At least that's what the first couple of mine did. But the thing is, they get really big and unwieldy, and they stop being able to hold themselves up.
Yes.
They can't breed.
Yes.
They're just grotesquely fat. So, think twice before you go with an industrial breed bird, in my opinion. But on the other hand, don't turn it down if that's what you're looking for. So anyway, meat-producing birds. Let's talk about those.
Well, I wanted to mention, too, that like the Jersey Giant, which is a bird that I have. It's a smaller Jersey Giant, but same thing. They're bred to get really, really big. And I guess oftentimes, if you have them around longer, they develop a lot of foot and leg and knee problems to the point where Yeah, that's, you know, so it's something to think about.
You feel like you're doing them a favor.
Yeah, I mean, my Jersey Giant is pretty healthy, but, you know, she's the only chicken I've ever had where she'll sit down and graze. You know, she'll, like, sit in the grass and peck at stuff all around her instead of walking around.
Is that because they're just used to being in cages?
No, I think it's because they're actually so heavy. Their bodies,
their bodies just can't support themselves anymore.
Big bird. So I think her little chicken legs, she wasn't bred to have the chicken legs to support that big, big body because they don't care about that. So, Yeah, so I guess their legs get tired, and then they just, she likes to sit there and eat. But she's a fantastic chicken. Yeah.
So I don't have a lot of experience with meat birds myself because I always figured other breeds also make meat.
Sure.
And I don't care if my chicken is a pound lighter.
I mean, technically you could probably eat any of them, even the bantams if you really wanted.
Well, of course you can. Yeah, you could. If it's meat, you can pretty much eat it.
But these meat birds too, at certain, the way that they've been bred is for them to really bulk up really quickly in the early development. So I guess one of the statistics I found was that they put on a pound of body weight per 2 pounds of feed. So if you imagine that's like astronomical. You know, imagine if every you know, pound of food you ate, half of that was turned into fat or muscle on your body. I mean, you would just be enormous. So... That's astounding.
And I just wanted to point out, that's pound of body weight, not pound of meat.
Mm-hmm.
So that means you've cut off the head, the feet, the feathers, the innards, and all of that. So you get less than a pound of meat for every 2 pounds of feed by weight after you cut everything off. And I guess that depends on how creative you get, like necks, internal organs, stuff like that. Yeah. Some people eat chicken feet. So I guess that varies.
Yeah.
But, you know, so you might be looking at somewhere around, 15 pounds of feed for 5 pounds of meat?
Maybe,
almost like a 1 in 3, maybe 20s, somewhere in there. I don't know. But
so
it's something to think about going into meat production because it's very feed intensive.
Uh-huh.
And we'll talk about ways to supplement that and lower feed costs. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Which is going to be really important if you're a meat grower, but
this is crazy.
What
because,
are our other breeds? Just let's get those out
first. Before we move on, I just want to mention something really quick that these meat birds can weigh 5 pounds or more at 8 weeks, which is insane. Five pounds or more at 8 weeks. Like these little chickens that we have in this box here.
They're 3 weeks old?
They're 3 weeks old, and I would say they maybe weigh 5 to 9 ounces.
Yeah.
Like, still in ounces. So if you compare that in you know, double the time that I've had them now, that they would weigh
gain
4 pounds. It's just, I don't even believe it's possible. So that's kind of, that's astounding. Like, if you want a bird that, you just want meat, you want it to really, like, beef up fast,
That's your bird.
The Jersey Giant, the Cornish Cross, and the Freedom Rangers are all, those kinds will beef up real fast and, put on the pounds. So, yeah.
So, let's see, that, then there's another basic, basic category called I guess we should talk about dual purpose birds. So dual purpose birds are sort of a compromise between completely oriented towards egg production and completely oriented towards meat production.
Yeah, and that covers a lot of chickens, really, it seems
like. It does, yeah. That's just kind of like saying everybody that isn't designed specifically for something.
For a specialized purpose.
And, you know, most people, I mean, the chickens have, up until recently, were like a subsistence farm crop, you know. It's a family, they've got a few birds, that kind of thing. So that family, you know, it didn't make sense for them to have a meat bird and a... egg bird.
Yeah.
Or rather, whole flocks of them. You know, mm-hmm. you choose certain birds for meat, usually mm-hmm. your surplus roosters, mm-hmm. and kill them as fast as possible. I mean, yeah. no,
well,
I'm just kidding.
It's true, like these meat birds, like we were just talking about, they reach their full weight before the egg layers
yeah,
would ever be ready.
You do have to
ready.
Kill them off quick.
But that's long before the egg layers would even be ready to lay eggs. So
right.
that's something that differentiates those. Sorry
that's true, too.
You
no, you're right. Them. That's a good point. So what are some good examples of dual-purpose birds?
Well, I have here the Orpingtons, mm. Plymouth Rocks, Barred Rocks, Brahmas, Delaware, and Light Sussex. But really, there's just so many. There's such a vast variety of all kinds
sure.
of birds that are kind of large, lay good amount of eggs. But those are the...
Mm. So these are all large varieties, the dual purpose.
Larger, medium varieties mm-hmm. that put on weight relatively quickly, but still have good egg production. So,
right.
Yeah. But really, there's quite a lot that fall into that category. And depending on which way of that spectrum you want to go towards the meat versus egg thing, then
right.
there's a lot to choose from. And especially as far as their physical characteristics and personalities and things like that.
There's lots of... things out there where you can look up specific characteristics of specific mm-hmm. breeds. It's
charts
kind of like
things.
Looking through a catalog of them, and there's catalogs of them.
Yeah.
And we might do something later on, like a segment where we single out one breed and talk all about it,
yeah,
stuff like that.
But
be
fun.
We'll see about that. Let's see. So.
Oh, sorry.
One thing that I still wanted to go over, we didn't talk about, was the ornamental varieties.
Yeah.
And there's different types of ornamental varieties. One type of ornamental variety are feather production birds,
oh.
one of which is Sumatra's. Mm-hmm. They have like these sort of raven-like black bird feathers with the long rooster tail feathers. Ooh. And yeah, the roosters, this is one of the arenas where the males are the more interesting thing. Mm-hmm. So if you want to go for that, you've got to get it in your head that, say, feather production is going to require more than one rooster, maybe a few. There might be some considerations that come with that. And that goes into yard design again. So now I have had a lot of roosters in the same flock mixed together. And there's sort of this idea that if you have a lot of roosters, they're going to be fighting each other to the death mm-hmm. all the time. And it's not really like that. In fact, the ones that I saw didn't really fight it. Or had, rather, didn't really fight much more than the hens did. And they weren't very emphatic about it. Like, they'd hop up and rake at each other a little, hop up and rake at each other for a little, and it might go on for a few minutes. But eventually one guy runs away, and that's the end of that.
Do they have a pecking order, just like the hens, do you think?
I'm sure they must, yeah. And they all went to bed in the same house together. And, I mean, it was pretty common for me to have two or three roosters. Now, granted, this was on a lot of space, so this was not crammed into an average house-sized backyard or anything like that. These guys had plenty of room to get away from each other. I made sure of that.
Uh-huh.
No, locking them in an arena together. That, but then again, they all woke up in the same house every mm-hmm. day, and no one even really seemed to get hurt, let mm-hmm. alone... you know, seriously injured. So you can have a lot of roosters, but it's also, you know, there's a lot of crowing.
They're noisy.
They don't just crow in the morning. Roosters do not just crow in the morning.
No, they crow when the moon comes out. They crow when the headlights go by of a car. They crow when they see something shiny, when they hear a noise. Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, at the slightest provocation,
yeah.
Which is good because that's the rooster doing its job.
Yeah.
So that's fine. But... just so anyway, yes, rabbit trail, feather varieties.
Mm-hmm.
There's a few. The game birds are very popular. You know, at just if you go to some craft store and you see natural feathers, odds are they're chicken. Odds are the dyed ones are chicken feathers too. But, you know, those breeds. Feathers might actually be a more viable money maker than eggs and meat, come to think of it, because
honestly,
you aren't competing against a giant, you know, 20,000 bird battery of warehouse insanity. There, I don't think there's like a giant feather production industry, but I'm just guessing by that. So anyway, there are other kinds of ornamentals too, and that gets more into my area of familiarity.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Tell us more. I want to know.
Well, so I really like the Polish varieties of birds, as I think I mentioned on an earlier episode.
Uh-huh.
They're the ones with the big floofy heads.
Mm-hmm.
And not all of the poofy-headed ones are Polish, but all Polish are poofy-headed. they're a very docile bird. They're on the smaller side. The roosters have really funny hairdos that, like, stick out all spiky in all different directions.
They kind of look like David Bowie sometimes.
I won't go into who they might look like, but... No, we're going to have a fun show.
Yeah.
So let's see, the Polish chickens. So, right, I had a lot of them. They laid eggs. Some of them got turned into meat. The meat was edible. They're smaller birds, but then again, they're smaller birds. You know what I mean? There's good and bad with that. So there's those.
Mm-hmm.
There's... silkies.
Oh, yes.
And there's all kinds of weird offshoots of silkies, like frizzles, which are silkies with their feathers that turn up all strange.
Aww.
And then I had naked neck frizzles, which is just like it sounds. those were all very strange birds.
Oh, yeah.
But there were a lot of nice things about them.
Mm-hmm.
They did lay eggs.
Mm-hmm.
They were smaller. It meant I cracked open 5 instead of 3 in the morning.
Mm-hmm.
I had enough birds, so whatever.
Yeah.
They eat less.
Oh.
They're smaller birds.
Uh-huh.
They lay smaller eggs.
That's kind of cool. They're economical.
Am I worse off? I don't think so.
Mm-hmm.
Well, there are some... And see, this is kind of a sort of chicken geekery route that I've never gone down. You can actually look up how many pounds you dump in and how many eggs, how much egg by weight you get out.
Uh-huh.
And some birds are more efficient than others.
Yeah.
Like the Polish are what's called an old world variety of chickens. And they are not as egg laying efficient as other breeds.
Oh, okay.
Like the ones that are bred for laying eggs, you know. The dual purpose ones. Ornamentals are not the birds to get if you want meat and eggs.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they'll work if you're just, I want a little bit for myself, but if your goal is to produce lots of meat and eggs, go get one of those breeds. But the neat thing about silkies, I think if I had a large flock or, you know, on a household scale, large of birds to raise, I would have at least a couple silkies, probably frizzles, because they're so ridiculous looking. They are really, really ridiculous
they're so
looking.
Cute.
Funny. Yeah.
Mostly
the comment people gave me was that thing shouldn't exist or some variation on that. The naked neck frizzle is an acquired taste for
That's
sure.
That's a strange bird.
But they're fantastic brooders. They with religious zeal brooders.
Mm-hmm.
They drop one, they hatch one clutch, march the chicks around, and the minute the chicks are old enough to be on their own again, the hen is on another clutch of eggs. And you can take other eggs and slip them under her. She'll hatch them up, raise them, doesn't care. They're really quiet and really small.
Mm-hmm.
So
friendly, too.
Yeah.
Very friendly.
The way I got a bunch of half-breed chickens was one of my hens just kept disappearing and wouldn't come in at night. And I found out that she was covertly brooding Yeah.
Little
so one day she showed up again after I had assumed she'd gotten eaten, and there was a pile of chicks behind her.
Girl can't help it.
But anyway, yeah, so they're fantastic brooders. So it's not like the ornamental ones are purely for looking at. There is a fair amount of utility there. But if what you're going for is utility, go with non-ornamental breeds.
Mm-hmm. Cool.
So there's a lot of considerations when you're picking your breeds. I mean, we've covered the four basic groups.
Mm-hmm.
Four basic groups there. If you count dual purpose as a group.
Mm-hmm.
But there's lots of considerations. Do you have kids? Or do you not have kids? Some breeds are better with children. Mm-hmm. Silkies are super good with children. The Polish are super good with children. The Bantams.
I heard the Cochins and the Orpingtons are very friendly and good with kids, too.
Yeah, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
The Polish are really good with them, though, because their feathers cover their eyes pretty much, so they've got no overhead vision, so a kid can just walk right up and, yeah, and the bird knows it, too, so, like, when the bird can tell you're coming for them, they usually just take a couple steps and give up kind of thing, especially if you train them to people, which is pretty easy to do. So do you have kids? Do you have pets? And if so, what kind? Because, you know, if you've got 9 cats, Bantams might be a poor choice. Whereas on the other hand, if you have white leghorns, you might want to worry about your cats.
Yeah, they can defend themselves, some of these chickens.
Yeah. Well, I had cats, and I never saw my cats go for chickens because it's kind of just like they knew better.
Dogs, too.
And I had some really wild, like, feral barn cats that would bring me live rabbits. Yeah. So they were not pansy
just
cats.
One peck in the nose, and most of these, and they're like, I don't think so.
Not to mention that there's a whole flock of them, and the cat doesn't want 15 little velociraptors after it. So do you have pets? Are they acclimated to chickens? You know, I could stick baby chicks all over my Doberman, and she didn't care. Some dogs, by their breed or their training, are not as good around birds, and you might want faster chickens or more alert chickens or
feisty chickens.
Right. There is a group of breeds called jungle fowl, and they're like more closely related to the wild chicken ancestor. And if you've got predation concerns, you might want to go with them because they are great evaders, but make sure you lock them up good because they're also serious flyers. So there's that. But they're the most likely to get away. Get Egyptian pharaohs. Those things are insane.
Those are the ones you said were like ping pong balls or something?
Well, the one I got, I've only had one, so maybe I shouldn't generalize about the entire breed, but the one I got was just
bouncing all over.
Wow. Yeah, I had a hard time catching that guy.
Wow.
So, yeah, disposition, that kind of covers that. You know, if you've got kids, you might not want Egyptian pharaohs. You might want barred rocks. You know, do you care, you know? Do you want to spend time cuddling chickens? Because if you do, like we were talking about with our chicks, right? The little feather-footed
Cochins.
Breed, which is a Cochin.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah, those guys are cuddle bugs.
They love it. They seek it out.
And the silver one, which is?
Blue Andalusian.
Blue Andalusian, that's it. Okay. Yeah, not so much of a cuddle bug.
No.
It just screams and screams when you pick it up.
It's standoffish. It doesn't want to be picked up, doesn't want to be touched. But the funny thing is it's the one that likes to approach and check you out. It's very curious.
It's a stalker.
But it doesn't want to be, doesn't want much to do with you.
Right.
But and then there's the other ones who just stay far, far away. So.
Right, right. Yeah. So disposition. You know, I guess I would say don't overthink it because a lot of birds that you can get for free anyway are half-breed varieties
anyway. Most likely you're going to enjoy them, you know, and learn about them. And
that's these aren't huge, you know, as long as you get a basic, you know, multi-purpose breed, it'll probably do for all of your purposes, unless you've got like a serious chicken mission. You know, I want to grow, you know, 100 meat birds or something. So, yeah, most of them will be okay for most people's purposes. Mm-hmm. Instinct for survival. Yeah, we talked about that, how you, there's, you know, if you live out in the wilds, you might not want a flock of silkies because they're kind of derpy little fluff balls that, yeah, don't do so good against raccoons. Let's see, one thing that you can do to learn more about the different breeds before making your chicken decision is go to shows.
Oh, yeah.
Or look for feed stores where they breed their own birds, mm-hmm. which is, I think, might actually be illegal in California, but I'm sure in other states it's allowed.
Uh-huh.
So, but anyway, if you can go somewhere where the chickens are bred and look at the different breeds and compare them and pick them up and see how they act, that'll inform your decision pretty greatly. Yeah, and like I said, don't overthink it. You can always get a mixed flock. You don't, unless your goal is to pure breed one or two particular breeds of bird, like for show or something, get a mixed flock.
Mm-hmm.
If you don't intend on breeding your birds, you don't have a rooster or whatever, then it doesn't, you don't have to worry about having one variety of birds. So just, you know, get one barred rock, a couple of Rhode Island reds, something that lays funny colors.
Yeah, some pretty bantams. And
a couple bantams, yeah, you don't have to worry too much. A lot of the problems that chickens have, or people have with chickens, well, okay, I guess I could put it that way too. A lot of the problems that chickens have come from being confined, you know? So if you've got 10 birds or 5 birds, let's say, in a little 6x10 area, and it's 4 big, giant Rhode Island Reds and one little bantam, that little bantam might have a hard time.
At first, at least. They get the, my little bantam's been around bigger chickens, and they get their pecking order sorted out, and you might want to watch them while they're establishing that. But then they kind of leave them alone.
But I guess what I'm getting at is with enough space, these problems don't happen at all.
That's true,
they just sort themselves out. The big chickens aren't really interested in beating the hell out of the little chicken because it's too much work to catch.
Yeah.
And there's enough space from it anyway. So, you know, just think about all those things when you get a mixed flock. But that's also a way to go. And then it allows you to explore firsthand the different kind of breeds. And chickens are popular. If you don't like it, you can always sell it and get a different one.
Sure. Mm-hmm. There's lots of things online, lots of charts and things like that where you can compare breeds and all kinds of information out there. So,
okay. Well, that's a lot to talk about. We've covered a lot, and there's a lot more that we could cover, but we've gone kind of long here, so we're going to have to put all of the stuff that we've gotten together that's still left over into future episodes, which, you know, we can talk about which breeds do what kind of egg colors. We can talk about which breeds are good if you want to try to get away with the rooster where you're not supposed to, or where it might be a problem with the neighbors. Let's just put it like that. We didn't really talk about sex-link birds, which is really useful if you're going for production and have a breeding program. We didn't talk about having a breeding program. That could be a whole show in itself, which we should probably do. We didn't talk about different feather varieties. Anything like that. So,
lots more to explore in the future. It's
exciting. Yeah. But for now, this has been Shannon.
And Amber.
And this is episode 4
of Twin Beaks.
Thanks for listening. A chicken whose name was Chanticleer clucked in lambic pentameter. It sat on a shelf reading songs of myself and laid eggs with a perfect diameter. Richard Maxson. And thank you for listening, ladies and gentlemen, to the Twin Beaks podcast. big fat worms and chocolate bar thank yous to Amber for doing all of the button flipping, knob turning, and computer wavelength doings that makes this podcast sound absolutely excellent, amazing, and makes it possible. Once again, folks, thank you for tuning in to the podcast. Many more to come. Stay tuned.